Just a reminder that James 5 is going on, and so at any point during the service, if you want to just cut out, there'll be some elders back there who will be able to pray for you, so feel free to do that at any point. When folk who aren't following Christ, I've noticed this over my many years as walking with Christ, when folk who aren't walking with Christ, when the wheels fall off of their life, we have an arsenal of reasons why, don't we? All kinds of quick answers that are sure to answer any theological conundrum here, and that is, well, what do you expect? They're not underneath God's protection, or it's just harvest time. You know, they're reaping what they've sown all these years, or maybe God has just run out of patience and run out of grace for them. But when the wheels fall off of our lives, well, not as many answers, right? I mean, what do you do with folk like us? So, okay, we're not on the mission field this morning. I got that. But we're in church. We don't have to be here, right? We're trying to do the right thing and serve God. But when things go sideways and we get the bad health prognosis or something bad happens to somebody we love, or you know, we really were trying to be a good steward and honor God with their money, but we got hammered by some financial tsunami and the people don't like us at work and all the stuff that we know. What do we do with those things? Well, our answers dry up, and the only question we have then is why? Well, at that point, our faith is really comes to a crossroads, and what we do with that will define our spiritual trajectory. It really does. And so we can't just hope that those things never happen to us and pray that they don't. And actually, that's probably a good thing. Go ahead and do that. But you know as well as I do that those things are going to. And so what do you do when they come? This morning, we want to look at a guy's life who lived 4,000 years ago, but whose life is as relevant as ours, I believe. Different culture, context, but same as what we're dealing with. So if you have your Bibles, if you'll look over to Genesis chapter 37, we're looking at a guy named Joseph. This is not the Mary and Joseph, you know, Jesus' adopted dad. That guy was going to be 2,000 years later than this guy. This is Abraham's great-grandson, Joseph. And in chapter 37 of Genesis, verse 2, it says, these are the generations of Jacob. They also call him Israel. It says, Joseph, being 17 years old, was pasturing the flock with his brothers. He was a boy with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, his father's wives. The first time we see Joseph, he is in the pasture. He's in the pasture. Now, the pasture is a place of insignificance. There is no Shepherd's Hall of Fame. And even for these cultures that depended on shepherding, it was kind of a lowly task. Remember, I think 1 Samuel 17, Samuel goes to talk to Jesse and says, we're looking for a new king. Do you have any sons? And so he looks at all of his boys. And Samuel says, well, no, these aren't going to work. Do you have any more? And the dad won't even say the youngest name, but says, I've got one more. He's the baby. He's out in the fields watching those sheep. Now, it's a point of derision. And in the New Testament, when the authors want to let us know the full scope of who Jesus came for, they paint the picture of the Magi, right? These are the guys that write the textbooks and the blue bloods and the Harvard grads and the very wealthy, sophisticated folk, and they come and worship Jesus. And then they swing the pendulum as far over as they can, and they have the shepherds, the folk whose testimony is not even allowed in court. Being a shepherd is a place. Being in the pasture is a place of insignificance. If you've ever been there, then you're like, I'm waiting for my ship to come in. That's all I'm doing with this right now is I'm just waiting. I know I could serve God, but he's not even giving me a chance right now. But I know one day I will get the option. And we stop, we do inventory, and we realize I'm not the CEO, and I'm not even in upper-level management, and most probably I will never be there. And I really don't have the musical ability that I hoped I had. And I'm furthest thing as that can be from an athlete. In that book I wanted to get published, unless my daughter marries an editor, that's never going to happen. I am an average Joe, Joseph. I am in the pasture. And I realize in the past year, my picture's never going to be on a box of Wheaties, and I'm never going to find the cure for cancer, and I'm not going to win a Nobel Prize, and I'm going to do a job that myriads of other people can do probably better than me. I will die in obscurity without contributing much to the human race. There. Don't you glad you came this morning, huh? Well, thank you very much for that. Yeah, I got it. Taking notes. Thank you. I feel so good now. But you're in the pasture at that point. Joseph was in the pasture, and he knew three things about the pasture that are important for us. One is he knew this is where God had him. God had him here. He knew that God was with him there. You know, I think, that it'd be nice if God came up and just kind of talked to me like he did everybody else in the Bible. Wouldn't that be nice? Until we realized that God actually spoke to very few people in the Bible. And if you have never had a supernatural experience, please know you're up there with King David and Ruth and Esther and Joseph. Joseph never had God speak to him directly, except maybe one time, and that's when he was in the pasture. So those times were just waiting to get out. I remember I got done with Moody, and I was waiting to get my first real job. Actually, I would come here, my first real full-time pastoring job, and I had scores of rejection notices, and I thought I'm waiting to get out of this pasture, I'm going to do something. I think I got to spend my time somehow, right? So my church had 70 people, and that was a good day, including the nursery, no youth group, and I thought, well, I'm going to try to start a youth group. And my first night at youth group, we had 6 kids. 4 of them were leaving for college in 2 weeks. And I stayed with that group for a year. And after that year, and the whole time, I'm waiting to get down. I'm just chomping at the bit. I got to get out of here. This is I'm wasting my time in the pasture. We had about 60 kids coming. Probably half of them accepted Christ that year. I mean, really, when I look back at it, that was one of the sweetest years, most productive years, one of the most powerful years of ministry. I was in the desert. Joseph knew when you're in the desert, your job is to trust God, and your job is to be faithful, very faithful to him. That's the goal. But Joseph didn't stay in the desert. Verse 3, now Israel, that's another name for Jacob, loved Joseph more than any other of his sons because he was a son of his old age. We know about the babies, right? They're always spoiled. And he made him a robe of many colors, but when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peacefully to him. Oh, yes. Well, what happened one day is the brothers then, they took their sheep. They went looking for literally looking for greener pastures for their sheep. And they got about 12 miles away, and the dad started wondering. They've been gone a while, and so he sends Joseph to go see if he can find them. And lo and behold, Joseph does. Verse 18, they saw him, Joseph, from afar, and before he came near to them, they conspired against him to kill him. They said to one another, here comes this dreamer. Come now, let us kill him and throw him into one of the pits. Then we will say that a fierce animal has devoured him, and we'll see what will become of his dreams. But when Reuben, he's the oldest of the boys, they have to listen to him because he's got the birthright now. But when Reuben heard it, he rescued him out of their hands, saying, let's not take his life. And Reuben said to them, shed no blood, throw him into this pit here in the wilderness, but do not lay a hand on him. And the goal was Reuben wanted to come back and save him later. But then they sat down to eat. Now keep in mind, Reuben at this point is probably taking a nap someplace. And looking up, they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels bearing gum and balm and myrrh on their way to carry it down to Egypt. Then Judah said to his brothers, what profit is it if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites and let not our hand be upon him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood. And his brothers listened to him. Then the Midianite traders passed by. And they drew Joseph up and lifted him out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. And they took Joseph to Egypt. Joseph goes from the pasture to the pit. To the pit. The pits. You think you had it bad. You think you've had trouble, right? Joseph, the one nice piece of clothing, I guess he has. that was more than a nice piece of clothing, right? It represented the one person in the whole world who loved him. The brothers gleefully destroyed this thing. Joseph, my guess is they didn't take it off real genteel. Here, Joseph, let me remove that. They probably ripped this thing off this guy. I'm assuming a beating somewhere along the way. They threw him into the pit, which was deep enough that he couldn't just jump out, so it had to hurt going down. And then he laid in his pit, just listening to his brothers talk about him, all the things they were going to do to him, and then maybe how they were going to sell him to the Ishmaelites. They dragged him up, sold him away naked, and he's leaving with the Ishmaelites. I'm guessing they're mocking him. And he knows that he's leaving the promised land. In his mind, God is in the promised land. He's leaving God. He's going down to a place of foreign tongue, no friends with him. He's alone. And you can imagine that he's just filled with questions. God, what is going on? Is the pits, are they ever God's will for our life? Absolutely they are. You might say, well, why? Well, Job lets us know that it's counterproductive to ask why, but we can take some guesses, right? Diamonds are coal under extreme heat and pressure. Perfume are flowers that have been crushed. I've got a good friend, I've known her for a while. She's been a Christian for quite some time, but probably floated on the top, on the superficial level in some ways, dallied with the distractions of the world. Y'all wouldn't, if you ever knew this girl, you wouldn't think that. She came to church like we do, just the way she lived. But then if I was to tell you the pit that she'd been in the last couple of years, there are probably few of us in here whose story could rival it. Probably some, but few. And I'll be honest with you. Her faith today is more pure than I've ever seen it. And not a urgent, get me out of this pit, God, but a peace, a joy, a commitment to God's word and to him. You know, the pit does that, doesn't it? It strips away from us all of those things that we were sure were going to make us happy and our identity and what we needed. It takes those away. And when you're in the pit, the only place you can look is up and you see God and you recognize that's all you ever really needed. The pit. Joseph knew when he was in the pit, he knew three things. He knew God had him there somehow. And he knew God was with him there. He wasn't alone. He felt like it, but he wasn't alone. God was with him. And he knew his job was to trust and to obey him. He's in the pit, but he doesn't stay there, because in chapter 39 it says, now Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian. So this guy is like the minister of defense. He's like a bigwig in Egypt. He's in charge of all of the Egyptian military. He had bought him from the Ishmaelites who had brought him down there. And the Lord was with Joseph. Now, I'm circling that Lord was with Joseph, because Joseph wouldn't have thought that. God's back in Canaan. What is he doing down in Egypt? The Lord is with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master, and his master saw that the Lord was with him. I'd circle that again. And that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. So Joseph found favor in his sight and attended him, and he made him overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had. From the time that he made him overseer of his house and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in house and field. So he left all that he had in Joseph's charge. And because of him, he had no concerns about anything but the food he ate. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. And Joseph, all right, things are starting to look up, right? Get out of that nasty pit. But he went from the pasture to the pit to the pot, Potiphar, right? And while he's with the pot, you know, he's still a slave. Still a slave, but he's the slave for one of the main people in Egypt. And he's the main slave for one of the main people in Egypt. And he's got some major responsibility. No more pasture stuff for this guy. And he's enjoying the accoutrements. And Potiphar recognizes that Joseph is the goose that lays the golden eggs. And so you know he's going to be taking care of him. And life is going well for him. And on top of all that, he looks fine. Now, in the scriptures, Hebrews did not describe what you look like. They didn't care what you look like. We don't have any idea what Jesus looked like or Abraham or Adam and Eve. I mean, it's never said. But when it is mentioned, our antennae need to go up. What's going on with this? Well, and after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, "Lie with me." Now think about Mrs. Potiphar for just a moment. Think about Mrs. Potiphar, because Mrs. Potiphar, being married to Mr. Potiphar, it had been real important that she looked very nice. He had a very important position. It had been real important for his wife to look very nice. Because of their socioeconomics, she could afford the finest Egyptian silks and clothes. Her hair was always done up perfect. Her makeup was always done up perfect. Her perfume was always perfect. And we're going to find she actually had an emotional relationship with Joseph. They were friends, I guess. This goes back for a little bit. And so in time, she had eyes for him. Joseph, think about Joseph. He's just a red-blooded 17-year-old Hebrew boy. And Mrs. Potiphar is his boss, after all. And on top of that, got to obey the boss, right? And on top of that, God kind of betrayed him. I mean, he didn't want this. He'd just as soon be back home. But God put him here. And God left him, and so he doesn't have a Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego to try to keep him accountable. No, he's on his own. No one's around. No one will ever know. This is the best thing for him to do just to keep safe and be able to continue to influence. What does Joseph do? He refused. And he said to his master's wife, "Behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house, and he has put everything that he has in my charge. He is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except yourself, because you are his wife." And Mrs. Potiphar, one of us here loves Potiphar, but I don't think it's you. And he says, "And how then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" And she spoke to Joseph day after day, and he would not listen to her to lie beside her or be with her. But one day, when he went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was there in the house, she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and got out of the house. Last time somebody got a hold of his coat, it was not good. It did not work well for him, and it's going to go this way again. But the pot, that's a place of temptation and testing. Here's the question. Is it possible that a place of temptation is God's will for us? Now, if I'm going to be misunderstood or misquoted, or it's going to be right here, so please listen well and hear what I say. Try to hear my heart too. It is God's will that we face these things. And this is why. Because there's no place on earth where we can more powerfully tell him that we love him than in the face of temptation. We should flee temptation, avoid temptation, do not run into temptation. Proverbs 7 says, if you do that, you're a fool. We do everything we can to get away from it, but we're not stupid. We know that temptation is stalking us, and sometimes it paints us into the corner, and when it does, it takes our love for Jesus, and it takes our flesh, and it puts them in a cage. There's going to be a cage fight, and one of them is walking out, and the other one is not. And when you are there, and when your mind is getting cloudy, and your flesh is salivating, and you're sure you know what you need to do, if you take a couple of seconds and just listen, what you'll hear is Jesus ask you, "Do you love me?" Because you can't answer that question with words. You can't ever answer that question with words. Words are cheap. You answer that question by actions. Jesus said, "If you love me, you will keep my commandments." And there's no place where you can answer that more definitively than in the face of temptation. Because what you do there, that answers the question. Do you love him or not? That's what answers that question. The pot. I don't know if you find yourself. in the pot these days, externally, things may look fine. No one knows. They're looking good. But internally, no one else knows. Maybe you find yourself there today. You need to know what Joseph knew. He knew that even in that test, God was there with him. His job was to trust God and honor him in the midst of that. But he doesn't stay there. Verse 13, and as soon as she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and had fled out of the house, you can imagine what's going to go on in Mrs. Potiphar's rage. She called to the men of her household and said to them, "See, he has brought among us a Hebrew to laugh at us. He came in to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And as soon as he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried out, he left his garment beside me and fled and got out of the house." Then she laid up his garment by her until his master came home, and she told him the same story, saying, "The Hebrew servant whom you brought in among us came in to me to laugh at me, but as soon as I lifted up my voice and cried, he left his garment beside me and fled out of the house." And as soon as his master heard the words that his wife spoke to him, "This is the way your servant treated me," his anger was kindled, I guess, and Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. That's real important, actually. And he was there in prison. But the Lord was with Joseph, even in prison, and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed. Now, the prison is a place of injustice. I mean, think of Joseph. Joseph did everything right. Didn't he do everything right? He did. He did everything right. But he lost huge. He lost all the comforts and accoutrements of being Potiphar's right-hand guy. But more than that, for a Jewish person, he lost his reputation, right? I mean, his reputation in the palace and everywhere he was that the Lord was with him. But now they're thinking, that Joseph, he's just a tricky one. Yeah, he made us think that he was a choir boy, but we know he has a sex pervert. We understand where he's at now. He's got nothing now. I mean, he's got nothing. I wish I could just talk about hypothetical situations here, but isn't it easy when you're in the prison and bad things happen, people treat you, injustices, gossip, whatever, evil steps in and leaves a scar, and they pack your bags, you're carrying it forever at this point. You get passed over for a promotion. Somehow injustice comes to roost for you. You're judged by your misunderstanding of your actions, and suddenly your motives have been indicted. Isn't it easy at that point to think what Joseph could have been thinking? Hang on. I'm serving the Lord. I'm trying to do good things. And what happens to me? Let me see. Okay, I am mocked and beat and thrown into a pit and sold to Ishmaelites and carried far away from home and framed and put in prison. Oh, that's the reward for serving the Lord. I am so grateful that God came through for me. It is so good to serve. We get into a pity party easy sometimes. Every one of us. It's just, when prison comes to roost, pity party usually, we put up the banners. But if he would have been having this pity party, he would have missed the reason why he was in the prison. Because he's in the royal dungeon, Pharaoh also puts his prisoners in the same dungeon. And so Pharaoh gets upset at a couple of his servants one day, throws them into the dungeon, the butler and the baker, and not the candlestick maker, right? These guys are down there. And because Joseph is in charge of all the prisoners, he knows these folk. He's hanging with them, and he checks on them one morning, and the butler and the baker are both looking frazzled, and Joseph says, "What is going on?" And they said, "We had a dream last night, and it's freaking us out." And Joseph says, "God understands dreams, and I know God, so let me know what it is." And so the butler says, "Okay, let me go first. I'm hanging out, and there's this grapevine. And there are three branches on it, and there's grapes on the branches, and I pluck the grapes and squeeze them into Pharaoh's cup, and then I give Pharaoh his cup, and I don't know what this means." And Joseph says, okay, this is what this means. The three branches is 3 days. And in 3 days, guess what? Pharaoh's going to give you your job back. You are going back home. Good for you. You'll be back there serving him his cup once again. And they're high-fiving, and it's wonderful. And the baker says, okay, since that worked out okay, let me tell you my dream. He says, in my dream, I had 3 baskets on my head, right? And then the top basket was filled with pastries. But all these birds in the air, they came and they ate the pastries. And I don't know what it means. And Joseph said, that means 3 days, Pharaoh's going to execute you. Listen, I'll tell you, it stinks to be you, but this is the way it is. And then as the butler is leaving, Joseph, text says, grabs him and says, listen, when you get out of here, will you please pull the strings that you need to pull to get me out of here, because I didn't do anything to deserve to be in prison. But guess what? Butler forgets him for 2 years. The injustices just continue to roll. He's just serving the Lord. He's just trying to do what's right, and the injustices continue to roll. So Joseph goes from the pasture to the pit, to the pot, to the prison. This reflects our life. But he doesn't stay in the prison. Our lives continue to move. They're fluid. And what happens is 2 years later, Pharaoh has a dream. And Pharaoh's dream bothers him, and he calls in his magicians and wise men. He says, here's my dream. Tell me what it means. And they say, we don't have a clue. And the butler's listening to this. And so the guys leave, and the butler's wondering, now, do I say anything or not? Pharaoh, you got somebody in your dungeon who can, I think they can probably interpret this dream. And so Pharaoh says, okay. Verse 14 of 41, it says, Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they quickly brought him out of the pit. And when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came in before Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I've had a dream, and there is no one who can interpret it. I have heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. And Joseph answered Pharaoh, it's not me, but God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. He says, Pharaoh, God knows dreams, and I know God, so let me share it with me. Let's, and then we'll see what happens. And so Pharaoh says, okay, this is the deal. I'm sleeping. And out of the Nile come these 7 huge cows. I mean, these are great cows and healthy cows. And I'm thinking, yes, that's what my cows should be looking like. That's wonderful. But then right on their heel come 7 scrawny, zombie-esque cows, right? And they eat. They're not supposed to be carnivores, but they eat. The healthy cows, but they're not looking any better because of it. And I don't know what this means, and I freak up. Ah! And then I go back to sleep, and I have this other dream, and there are these 7 ears of corn. Big, healthy ears of corn that we're going to feed all of Egypt. I'm thinking, that's wonderful. That's what my corn should look like. But then 7 scrawny ears of corn come up, and I don't know how they do it, but they eat the big corn, and but they don't look any better because of it. I'm just not sure what this means. And Joseph says, Pharaoh, these 2 things, it's the same dream. You just need to know this is what's going to happen. There's going to be 7 years of feast. It's going to go well. Oh, it's going to go well. But then there's going to be 7 years of famine. And if you're not prepared, the famine is going to destroy everything from the good years. And then Joseph sticks his neck out. He should not have done this. He was just supposed to interpret the dream. You don't give Pharaoh advice, but he does. He says, Pharaoh, let me give you a little counsel. If I'm you, I'm going to look for somebody who could administrate this 7 years, who can build storehouses and plant extra seed and take all the excess and just make sure there's plenty of excess and store it up so that when we hit the famine, you know what, we're going to be okay and Egypt will be saved. And Pharaoh says, okay, you're my man. Verse 41, he says, Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh took his signet ring, which would be kind of like his checkbook or his signature. I mean, this was all of his power, from his hand and put it on Joseph's hand. And he clothed him in garments of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. And he made him ride in his 2nd chariot. And they called out before him, bow the knee. Thus he sent him over all the land of Egypt. So Joseph goes from the pasture to the pit to the pot to the prison to the palace. We might think, yes, the palace. Yeah, now you're talking. See, that's what I'm like. The palace, that's a good deal. But Joseph, I think he would say, hang on. On one level, there's no difference between the palace and the pasture and the pit and the pot and the prison, because God has me here just as God had me there. And God is with me here just as God was with me there. And God has a task for me here to trust him and be faithful just as he had a task for me there. Some of us today, you know, some of us are in the palace. I think all of us get there sooner or later. Palaces come in different sizes. Things are going well. Life is good. But we're never in the palace to be fat and lazy and to enjoy it for ourselves. There's a job. And so Joseph is doing his job. The 7 years of plenty have come. They've stored up lots of grain. They are 2 years into the famine. And the famine is even reaching Canaan, where his brothers and dad live. And so the brothers come down to Egypt to get grain because they hear grain is in Egypt. And they get in line, and lo and behold, they get in Joseph's line. And Joseph looks up next, and there are his brothers. And now they don't recognize him because he's, you know, dressed like an Egyptian and talking like an Egyptian and walking like an Egyptian. They don't recognize him, but he recognizes them. And what would you be thinking? Oh, how sweet things are. Oh, what a turn of events. Oh, I'm looking forward to what this is going to do. I mean, Joseph knows, though, the palace, that power, is not for his vengeance. So after testing his brothers, and he tests them well, make sure their heart is good. He says in chapter 45, verse 4, "So Joseph said to his brothers, 'Come near to me, please.' They came near, and he said, 'I'm your brother Joseph, whom you have sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed,'" I can imagine they're pretty distressed at this point, "'or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are yet 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest, and God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh, the Lord of all his house, ruler over all the land of Egypt." You see what's going on. This is huge. Because Joseph's putting the dots together. Sometimes we can't put all the dots together this side of glory, but Joseph was able to. And he's recognizing this, that God put me through all of that to get me exactly where he needs me to be, to not just preserve the Egyptians, but to preserve you guys, the Canaanites, the Jewish people, the Hebrews. If Joseph would not, this would not have happened, the Jewish nation is only 70 people strong right now. They would be destroyed, decimated, and with them the hope of the Messiah. So Joseph knew. I mean, if you think about this for just a moment, there's a lot of coincidences with this thing, right? Jacob, for whatever reason, sends Joseph to go find his brothers. He had lots of other hired hands he could have sent out, but he sent Joseph. And then it just so happens, right? And then he gets there, and the brothers are going to kill him. But for some reason, and we don't even know why, it just so happens that Reuben, the oldest one, has decided that they shouldn't kill him. So they had to listen to him. And it just so happens that they were camping on a major trade route. Well, I mean, the Ishmaelites' caravans aren't all through the Judean hills, right? There's a special trade route. And so they're camped right there, and it just so happens that they sell them to the Ishmaelites. The Ishmaelites they're heading towards the Mediterranean. It would have been normal for them to put them on a boat, send them to Europe, but they take them down to Egypt. And it just so happens that when the Ishmaelites get there and they put Joseph on the slave trade block, at that very moment, Potiphar is there, and it just so happens that Potiphar is looking for a slave like Joseph, and it just so happens that Potiphar gets him. Mrs. Potiphar has eyes for him. Joseph, because he's righteous, is framed and thrown into the dungeon, the royal dungeon, and it just so happens that Pharaoh throws in a couple of guys who just so happens have crazy dreams that Joseph hears about and answers and allows him to get into the palace. So a lot of just so happens. All of these things, God had been lining up. And God does not work in your life, in my life, different than he worked in Joseph's life. All of those things that we don't understand, that make no sense to us, God is just as much involved in our lives It's the people, the Mrs. Potiphar's, the brothers, the warden. Those are not accidental to our lives. Those are key players that God has injected into our life. And if we trust him with those situations, those relationships, and we honor God with those relationships, we will see what God will do. You know, it's interesting. I think this is so ironic to me. This was Judah's idea to sell Joseph, right, into slavery. 2,000 years later, one of Judah's grandboys, all the other brothers there, their great-grandchildren as well, would sell one of Judah's grandchildren and would sell them for the same price of a slave, would sell them to the Gentiles, would sell them the one that the father loved, would sell this one who said he would rule over them. Oh, please. Let's see what happens with that. And because of their selling, and because of the righteousness of the one, this one, Jesus, sin was atoned for. We can be here today. And partially, on one level, I suppose, we could say we're here because Joseph was righteous in where God placed him. Specifically, though, because Jesus was. And so I don't know if you find yourself right now in the pasture or the palace or anything in between, but you got to know, I got to know, God has us there. God is with us there. And it is our job to trust and to be faithful. And if we do, I think we will see what God is up to. Would you pray with me? Just to say thank you, God, thank you. So many things in our life we would curse, we would wonder, and yet you in your grace working such a big plan, it's even beyond our understanding, but thank you, Lord. Don't always understand how your sovereignty and the sinful world work together, but Lord, would you remind us that you're with us? Would you help us to trust you regardless? And for my brothers and sisters here, oh, Lord, some of the situations that some of them are in, whether it's mundane pastor or the accouterments of the palace or the temptations of Potiphar or the injustices and the pain of the pit and the prison, Lord, would you remind them that you're there? And would you help us to represent you well, that the world might know that you're real, that you care. Pray it in the name of Jesus. Amen. Have a good rest of the day.